From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is a very special edition of the Closing Market Report. Dan Zwicker is away today. We'll talk about the agricultural futures markets before tomorrow morning's USDA WASDE reports with Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. And then in the second part of the program, and we'll start it very, very early, we'll talk with the president of Pioneer Hybrid. That's a DuPont company. His name is Paul Schickler. Our conversation took place late in the last month. That would be the month of June, when Mr. Schickler was in Santiago, Chile. We had a wide-ranging discussion about Pioneer and its introduction into China. You'll hear it all right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July soft red at 534 in the wheat pit, up 18 and a quarter. December there up 17 and three quarters at $5.77. Hard red winter wheat in Kansas City at the Board of Trade at $5.54 on the July contract. A settlement up 16 and three quarters. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, July futures 377 and a half, up 6 and three quarters. September 385 and a half, 7 and a quarter higher. In December futures, $3.96 and a quarter, up 7 cents. The March contract at $4.08, up 6 and three quarters, and May corn at $4.15 and three quarters for 2011, up 6 and three quarters of a cent. July bean futures at 10.12 and a half, up 19 and a half cents. The August soybeans 9.83, up 15 and a quarter. September at 9.57 and a half, up 16 and a half, and November beans $9.46, up 13 and a half. January futures 9.54 and three quarters, 15 cents higher. July bean meal at 3.10.40, up 6.40. July oil at 36.86, 5 cents higher. August live cattle futures at $90.90, up 40 cents. August feeders at 113.60. finished 5 cents higher, and the July lean hog futures for the day at $78.87.5, finished the day unchanged. The August contract at $80.90 a hundredweight. August lean hog futures $80.90, up 7.5 cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. August crude oil futures $75.74 a barrel, up $1.67. Denatured ethanol at $1.60 and 3 tenths, up $0.01 and 9 tenths. Natural gas at $4.40 and 8 tenths of a cent, down 15 and a half cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel 3 and 7 tenths lower, at $2.06. July gold futures, $1,195.80 an ounce. That's a settlement price, down $2.80. The Dow at 10,068 is just about 51 points higher. The dollar at 83.82 is unchanged on the afternoon. And the CRB index at 259.51 is up 1.27 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like and across the Midwest, as produced by our own Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. He says the dryness will be eased by a little rainfall that should occur from southern Missouri to Kentucky and the far southernmost parts of Indiana over the next 2 days. That rain will range in amounts from an inch to 2 inches. Locally, more possible. Showers elsewhere from central Illinois to northern Ohio and Michigan will generate erratically distributed rainfall, leaving some areas in need of greater rain, while others should get sufficient rain to take care of the recent dryness, at least. Ohio, southeastern Indiana, eastern Kentucky will remain very warm today. Seasonable temperatures likely in other parts of the Midwest through the early part of next week. The second week weather may trend a little warmer again with some decrease in rain intensity, but showers will continue periodically. Another frontal system may bring showers to the Midwest again briefly late next week, but the system will be a weak one. That's an update of the weather forecast from our own Drew Lerner. You can hear him on our website if you'd like at willag.org in the opening market report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets is Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. Good afternoon to you, Sue.
Good afternoon, Todd.
How are you today?
I am great, but you gotta be. It's a gorgeous day.
It is a gorgeous day, and you know what? The temperatures are, while high, I suppose we're looking forward to a little rainfall, maybe some of the temperatures coming down, a bit of the humidity going away. It should be pretty nice, I think. On the flip side, we can look into the marketplace, and are we saying pretty nice at this point, or are we scared, confused? What do you think before we head into tomorrow morning's USDA WASDE reports?
Well, I think as we go into those reports, I think that, after seeing the quarterly stocks report and the surprises that that held for corn and even on bean carryouts or stocks, I think that, and everybody doesn't agree with the acres that the USDA had on beans, so I think, having said that, I think the market is doing what it ought to be doing. After seeing the sharp reduction in corn acres and then the tightening of the carry due to usage and also possibly that the government may have overstated the yields last year, I think that that should say we should have $4 new crop corn, even maybe pushing up around 404 to at least give it a better test. Now, today you got to 97.5, 397.5 on the D's. And, of course, the May high is 399, and that's your spring high. So I think that on the corn, you know, the market's going to be real interested tomorrow as to what do we see in the way of yield, because that's probably about the only number. They meld that and also possibly the supply of ethanol. But basically, I think the yield is what everybody's eyes are going to focus on for corn. And then when we look at world numbers, it'll be interesting to see if they tweak the wheat and the corn numbers in the world. A lot of poor weather patterns are occurring in Europe and Russia and in Kazakhstan and Pakistan and in Canada. And so there's areas where we could see the government lower production. But all in all, I would suspect it may take another month before we get that. The bean market, I believe, you know, when we looked at Iowa this last week, for example, we lost, 7% in our corn condition in the good to excellent, and we lost on beans as well. And I think that this week we're going to see some more slippage coming up next Monday afternoon, because Iowa has had some pretty hard, heavy rains again this week. And it's taken in areas that at first had been, you know, we started off with from I-80 south at least, where we had way too much rain in April into the first half of May. Then it was the other areas of where, like, say, Highway 20 or whatever north that caught way too much rain. I know on our farm we had 15 to 17 inches of rain in the month of June. And now we're kind of starting to ease up a little bit, but then yesterday, Waterloo, Iowa, had 7.5 inches of rain, and just 10 miles south of me, from maybe, say, 25 miles south of Highway 20, we had about 5 inches of rain in an hour. And so you're catching all these heavy cloudbursts, and they come hard and fast, and it drowns out stuff, and rivers go out of their banks and all this kind of stuff. And so I think that we're going to see more ponding. And then, even as those ponds go down, all of a sudden farmers look and they see these fringe areas of the pond where the corn starts to show deterioration too. And I think that we're going to see further slippage next week. And the beans, I think, will start to cave in as well and maybe slip more.
Let's focus a bit on the ending stocks. Average trade guess for tomorrow for the current marketing year for corn is a 1.4, 169 on the carryout for the soybeans for the coming marketing year, or the crop that's in the ground now, a 1.3 billion bushel carryout, a 366 million bushel soybean carryout when we get to the fall of 2011. What do you make of those numbers, and are they close?
Well, I think they are close. You know, we have to remember that a year ago, we on old crop, we had 138 million bushels, so we still have more beans. And yet, if you look at back in June, we kept hearing word that the commercials were Bungie and, Cargill and different ones were washing out of delivery certificates because they wanted to keep control of the beans. And you've got China continually coming back at us for old crop beans as well as new. And I think that their appetite is so strong that even in corn and beans both, that I think on the beans, our carryout might be a 169. But in the meantime, we have to take a look at for new crop what they're going to key in for a yield. And we also have to remember that some really question those acres but on the beans. But, you know, I'm hearing double crop beans are kind of going in fairly quick down in Oklahoma. And on the corn, you know, with you could have a 168 yield and still, and currently in the last report, the USDA was at 163.5, I believe.
Right.
And so you could have a 168 yield and pencil out all the usage and still come up with a carryout next year that is no better than what we had this past year. And in the meantime, you've got China with the potential of coming at us for 4 billion bushels of crop.
So you've given us, at this point, a December corn price at $4 or better, which you think is right. November beans, what do you think? It's 9.46 today. Is that high enough, low enough? Where?
No.
Where's the right spot?
I think beans are going to head up on up to around 964 to 976. We need to take a look there and see how the market performs. Let the market kind of tell us something. But I would not be surprised if this market, you know, you look at the July beans today, and they got to 1022.5, and there's a parabolic resistance at 1027.5, but the April high was 1022.5. And so we took that, or 1020.5, I should say, so we took that high out. And we also managed to still close higher than what we did when we made that high in April. So I think that's positive. And I also think, while seasonally, this is a week that you can have strength in the market as we're going towards the pollination of the corn crop and trying to make the corn crop. And, of course, the weather forecast looks so good for pollination that, and they say 90% of your yield comes from pollination. But the key is, what's it going to be like? Are we going to build some weather premium into this? Because we have no weather premium in this market yet. And I think we will. Now, in the near term, it doesn't sound like we have to worry about the weather forecast, per se, as far as too much heat. But we had a hurricane that sort of helped the cause here and saved us. But I think that this heat, we're way past due for a drought. Alan Taylor has said that the longest we've gone without a drought is 23 years. This is year number 22. He also said 16 out of the last 17 droughts started on the East Coast in the Carolinas. Well, they've got that. So the potential's there, and it may be such a thing that there's enough concern that we have to price in a little bit of premium here for protection. And I think that the bean market is underpriced a little bit on the new crop beans at this time. They tried to break down through $9, got to $8.98, a 7.86% retracement, couldn't seem to go any further. And if you can't break down, there's only one direction, and that's up. And both the wheat market and the bean market was loaded short.
All right. Thank you so much, Sue.
You bet. Have a great day.
Hey, thank you. And that's Sue Martin. She's with Ag and Investment Services. Joins us from Webster City, Iowa. If you'd like to hear Sue again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, hit over to the right-hand side of the page and hit subscribe or manage your subscription, one of the two. And when you do that, you'll find a way to give us your cell phone number. If you do that, tomorrow morning when those WASDE numbers are released, we will text to you the WASDE numbers, ending stocks numbers, for the corn and the soybeans. It's all free, and it's all off our website at willag.org. One other note, dial this number if you can't hear us on the radio or on the website. It's 217-333-3434. We call that our mobile analyst portal. Coming up in just a moment or two, we'll start the farming world a bit early. We'll talk with Paul Schickler of Pioneer Hybrid. It's a DuPont company. He serves as their president.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Paul Schickler. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrid, a DuPont business. Mr. Schickler joins us from just outside of Santiago, Chile. Thank you for joining us and for being with us for a bit today. We do appreciate it. Can you tell me first about your experience in Pioneer? You've been with the company for quite some time.
Yes, Todd. First of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I've been with Pioneer 35 years, started immediately after finishing my undergraduate degree at Drake University in Des Moines, and started in general finance and administrative activities. Over the next number of years, I moved into some logistical areas around our international business in the late 70s as our international business was just starting. After a period of years then, I went back into the finance areas and various departments and geographies in North America. And then in about 1993, was named Vice President for Resource Planning in Pioneer. In 1999, we were acquired by the DuPont Corporation, and at that time I moved into international operations and was responsible for the international operations of Pioneer until 2007 when I was named president.
And why are you in Chile today?
We have extensive operations in Chile. We have, of course, a commercial business where we sell seed to farmers in Chile, but also because of Chile's unique environment and also off-season location, and by off-season I mean off-season from the Northern Hemisphere, we use Chile for research, off-season winter nursery activity so that we can bring products to the market quickly. And then we also have one of the largest seed production facilities in the world, again, to produce seed in the Southern Hemisphere for markets in the Northern Hemisphere.
I suspect that you are in Iowa more than you are in Chile. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, just checking to make sure. So let's talk a little bit about Pioneer Hybrid and some food security issues. What is it that Pioneer is looking at this point? And then we'll have some deeper discussion once you outline some of the topics.
Okay, well, very good. That's a good place to start. First thing that I think people need to understand is that Pioneer Hybrid has been in business for more than 80 years, and our business since day one all the way to today has been to increase the productivity of farmers everywhere in the world. We've done that very successfully, starting from a beginning in Iowa, extending throughout the United States, and now throughout the world. But as you look to the future, I think there are a couple of things that are very well understood and that all of us face as we look out to the years ahead, and that is an increasing population throughout the world, a population that is going to be increasingly urban, and a population that is going to be increasingly growing in some of the developed countries. So if you consider that today we're somewhere around 7 billion people throughout the world, the projections are that by the year 2050, the population of the globe will be 9 billion people. When you combine all those factors, that we're going to have 2 billion more people on the globe. Most of those people will be living in urban environments, and most of the additional new people in the globe over the next 30 to 40 years will be growth in developing countries. Combining those factors with the improved economics that we expect the globe to see in the years ahead, resulting in improved diets, people would say that we need to have twice the amount of food production in 2050 as we have today if we're going to support a global population of 9 billion people.
When you take those factors into consideration, how do you put a company like Pioneer in a position to help farmers around the globe produce that much in the way of food and commodities? And can you talk about the differences between those two sorts of things? Because they really are two sorts of thing, different things.
Sure. Yes, well, as I said, Pioneer's business has been and is increasing the productivity of farmers everywhere in the world. We think that we can make a significant contribution to doubling food production. If you look back at the history in the United States, from the time that hybrid corn was first developed in the 1920s until now, generally productivity has increased at a rate of about 1.5 to 2% per year. We think that with continuing to use enhanced germplasm, continuing to improve the agronomic practices of farmers everywhere in the world, and then by using additional tools like biotechnology, that as we look to the future, we can double that rate of productivity increase. So moving from somewhere around that 1.5 to 2% per year range to 3% per year, and if that is accomplished, we can certainly meet the expectation of doubling food production by the year 2050. Now, you asked the question about, how does commodity food or commodity agricultural production relate to food production? Pioneer develops seed genetics for a number of commodity products, such as corn or maize, as it's called in many parts of the world, soybeans, hybrid rice, sunflower, canola, alfalfa. Those are our main products. Most of those products are produced by farmers as commodities and then sold in markets throughout the world, and ultimately are used in many different forms. But the greatest proportion of usage goes into animal production. That could be animal production for meat, whether it's beef, poultry, or pork, or also into the production for dairy products, milk, also the production of eggs, and so on. So it is a raw material that is used to convert animals into higher content of protein, foods that are in demand, as not only the population of the world increases, but the diets of the population also improve.
Paul Schickler is the president of Pioneer Hybrid Seeds. More with him when we return here on the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Milk Chocolate with Almonds Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1497, Vasco da Gama left Lisbon with four ships to search for a sea route to India. He was the first European to sail there, and he opened the area to Portuguese trade and colonization. In 1810, Gabriel Gustav Valentin was born. This German-Swiss physiologist was the first to discover the digestive activity of pancreatic juice. In 1831, John Pemberton was born. Pemberton was the pharmacist who invented Coca-Cola in 1885. By the way, at first it was a tonic called French wine cola. He later modified the formula, taking out the alcohol and adding vegetable essences. Originally, the syrup was meant to cure headaches. In 1881, the ice cream sundae was invented. Edward Berner of Two Rivers, Wisconsin, put chocolate syrup over a dish of ice cream and served it to a patron at his drugstore. Why chocolate syrup? Because flavored soda water was not allowed to be served on the Sabbath. Thus, the new treat, the ice cream sundae, named after the day of the week it was created. And in 1886, it rained snails in Cornwall, England. By the way, July is one of the most prolific months of the year for raining all sorts of living creatures. The top animals likely to fall from the sky? Fish or frogs? And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Our guest today is Paul Schickler. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrid. Mr. Schickler, you said we need to double productivity for corn, beans, other types of crops. Can that be done with the genetics that are available from Western organizations and companies like Pioneer?
Todd, that's a very good point, because I do believe that we've got great opportunity to improve productivity in areas that are already at the top end of yield production. So areas like the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. And let's put things into simple terms. Generally, in the United States, the average production is about 165 bushels to the acre for corn. Throughout the world, volume and area is measured in metric tons and in hectares. So let's convert the 165 bushels to acre to metric tons per hectare, and the number that I cited, 165 bushels to the acre, would equate to about 10 metric tons per hectare for yield of corn in the United States. That's very consistent in Western Europe, where farming practices and genetics are also utilized at a very high level. But if you go to other places around the world, let's take Brazil as the first example. The national average for Brazil is somewhere around 5 to 6 metric tons per hectare for corn. If you go to Argentina, a little bit higher productivity, about 7 metric tons. In China, which is the second largest corn market in the world, again, you'd be at levels about 6 metric tons per hectare. But then when you move to Africa, an area where, of course, population is growing, where food production and food security is a very, very a need that's in very, very high order, the production there for corn or maize is only at about 3 metric tons per hectare. So you can see that if we can move countries like China and a region like Africa, if we can move their yield levels up significantly and even approach what the U.S. and Europe are now producing, that would go a long way towards meeting the local food requirements in China and in Africa, or increasing the production in countries like Brazil and Argentina, which already play significantly in the export market throughout the world. If we can improve those levels of productivity, there would be more food to move throughout the globe.
You mentioned already that China is the second largest corn producer on the planet, raising just about half what the United States does on the same amount of acres, or roughly speaking. What needs to happen for their production to increase? Do they need better genetics, like Pioneer might provide them? Do their farm sizes need to be bigger, or do they need to adapt better cultural practices?
The easy answer to that question is all of the above.
That's Paul Schickler. He is the president of Pioneer Hybrids. It's a DuPont company. He's been talking with us here on the Closing Market Report for some of our radio stations. Stay with us. More with Mr. Schickler on China in a moment. For the rest of you, you can hear it online at willag.org. And you have a good afternoon if you have to say goodbye to us. I'm Todd Gleason from the University of Illinois.
So let's take a look at China and compare it to the United States. As you said, in area, the amount of corn produced in China is about the same as the United States. I think this year the United States will have corn planted on somewhere around 90 million acres. As I mentioned, China is the second largest producer of corn, and they'll grow corn somewhere on about 75 million acres. But again, the productivity level is much different. So as you pointed out, Todd, the volume that is produced in China is only half of what it is in the United States, even though their land area is nearly the same as the United States. So how do you bring that productivity up? Again, that's our business, increasing the productivity of farmers. We've been doing research in China for about 15 years. The environment in China, you know, if you just consider the latitude, is very similar to the United States. So the yield potential in China is the equivalent of the United States. Very good growing conditions, very good environmental conditions. But again, the technology level is much different. And when I speak of technology, it means a number of things. Let's first start with the genetics. I think that Pioneer, as well as other countries and companies and the actual institutes in China that do breeding, can make significant improvements in the genetic performance of hybrid corn in China. So you've got the opportunity to increase the foundation of productivity still much further in China. The second factor is improving the quality. I said that we've been doing research in China for about 15 years. We've only been commercialized, actually producing and selling seed in China for about 8 years. But when we entered the market, not only did we bring that improved genetics so that the foundation of productivity is there, but we also brought improved quality, both in purity as well as in germination. So what farmers are able to do is get the most out of their production that genetic potential has through both improved purity and germination. For instance, our seed in China that we sell probably has in excess of 90% germination. That's a much higher rate than what the normal Chinese seed producers provide to growers throughout China. So that is a second very important way to improve productivity, is taking advantage of the genetic improvements and then adding to that improved quality and germination, so those genetics can show up in productivity in a farmer's field. But then the third component is improving agronomic practices. So that's ensuring that planting rates, fertility, appropriate use of mechanization, the appropriate use of fungicides and herbicides are all used in a very collective and coordinated fashion, so that you are getting maximum productivity out of the seed that's growing in the ground. And then as you look to the future, certainly additional tools like biotechnology can be added to all those components that I just have mentioned, things like herbicide tolerance, insect protection, drought tolerance, and other biotechnology attributes, so that you can build productivity through biotechnology onto the basic foundation of strong genetics, good quality, and improved agronomic practices. So when you combine all those things together, you've got a great opportunity in a country like China to improve productivity from a level now that is much less than what the United States and Western Europe achieved to higher levels of productivity.
You mentioned that in China, germplasm was important. I have two questions, actually, on production in China. Is fertility or fertilization, meaning NPK, an important part of bumping up what hybrids are able to produce in total yield in China? And how far behind might they be, if they are at all, in terms of soil fertility?
Not as far as you might think, Todd. In most cases in China, fertility and soil management is practiced very effectively. And part of the reason for that is that the average farm size in China is about 0.5 hectare, which would be just basically a little bit over an acre. So the farm size is very small, and that enables farmers to manage their area very effectively. So one of the things that they do accomplish better, again, than you might think, is to very much control the soil and fertilization. So as I look to the opportunity in China, I think more is going to come through improved genetics, improved seed quality, and the collective agronomic practices in improving those, including fertility, but not solely fertility, and then ultimately biotechnology. So again, it's not any one area that is deficient. I think you need to look across the entire ag system, whether it's in China, as I've been describing, or in other parts of the world. You need to look at the entire system and see how you can elevate the entire system up to a higher level.
Would a farmer in the Midwest recognize the germplasm that the Chinese producer is using as a hybrid that he might know?
Maybe not the exact hybrid, but I think they'd recognize the germplasm because, again, that's one of the benefits of a company like Pioneer doing business in the United States, as well as China, as well as Thailand or Brazil, and that is we can move germplasm around the globe so that we can take advantage of, for instance, in the United States, very high-yielding, high-quality germplasm. We can combine it with tropical germplasm that might have more native resistance to some of the challenges of producing corn in the tropics, like intense disease pressure. You can combine it with other characteristics, like combining flint and dent crosses, and even growing in different maturity levels, all the way from maturities in the 70 days to in Europe, all the way to 130-day maturities as you get closer to the equator. So if we can combine all the genetic resources throughout the world and evaluate those crosses and bring to the local market the best product that is suited for that local environment, but using the genetic resources from a global research program, that helps farmers everywhere. It helps farmers in the United States to have access to those genetic backgrounds that otherwise would not be present in the United States, and it helps farmers in China improve their productivity by accessing resources elsewhere.
And finally, because we're here in the Midwest, I would be amiss if I didn't ask you what Pioneer has in the pipeline for producers in Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Indiana, Kansas, Missouri, all those states across the U.S. that produce corn.
Okay. So let's just focus on a couple of the exciting things that we do have, both near-term as well as a little longer in the medium-term for corn and in those states you mentioned also soybeans. For corn, we're very excited about the continued improvements that we've made in insect protection, one of the areas that can rob corn from its yield potential and also is very costly for farmers to deal with. So we have new insect protection traits that are combined into a concept that we call Optimum AcreMax. And what that does is it enables farmers to deal with the refuge requirements for corn rootworm by including the refuge in the bag, so the farmer does not have to plant a separate and different strip refuge for corn rootworm, but instead the refuge is in the bag, and we've also reduced the refuge from the previous 20% to 10%. So two very important improvements, a more convenient refuge practice, as well as a reduction from 20 to 10. That's AcreMax 1. That's in the field this year, 2010, and targeted for the corn rootworm or below-ground insect issues that farmers face. As you look to 2012, we're going to take that same concept, and by that I mean the refuge in the bag so that it's planted consistently throughout the field rather than separately, refuge in the bag combined with a refuge reduction for both corn borer above-ground insects as well as corn rootworm below-ground insects. We expect to have that product, Optum AcreMax 2, in the market in 2012. If you look to soybeans, we have made great progress with improving the productivity of soybeans throughout the United States. In 2009, we introduced a series of elite genetics called Y-Series soybeans, and those products were so successful and in demand by farmers that in the first year that we sold Y-Series soybeans, Y-Series made up about one-third of our sales in 2009. The performance of those beans was very, very strong in 2009. So as we look to this year, about two-thirds of our sales are in Y-Series soybeans, a tremendous growth in sales, but really due to the fact that it's been accepted extremely well by farmers. The next technology that we would look to bring to farmers throughout the United States would be Optimum Get soybeans. And what that does, it combines the glyphosate protection and sulfonylurea protection in Optimum GAT with the existing glyphosate protection that's in the market today. And when that is combined, not only do you have better herbicide tolerance, but it also results in a product that yields up to 6% more than the current competitive varieties containing just the Roundup Ready 1 trait. So we're very much excited about that. That's a little bit further out in the future, expecting to be commercialized in about 2014. Then we also have additional work being done to improve drought effectiveness, clearly something that any farmer at any one time throughout the United States faces. We've got some native drought products that are being introduced this year, 2010, and also 2011. But then longer term, there'll be transgenic solutions to drought, and then we're also pursuing very interesting leads in transgenic solutions to make nitrogen utilized more effectively by the corn plant. So when you combine all those opportunities, improving productivity, enabling herbicide tolerance, ensuring that the crop is protected against insects, and then adding to those capabilities drought protection and improved nitrogen utilization. That's a great combination for improving productivity for U.S. farmers for corn and soybeans.
This afternoon on the Farming World, we're talking with Paul Schickler. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrid. That's a DuPont business. More with him when we return.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here's something of interest from the University of Illinois. University of Illinois scientists have learned that a specific omega-6 fatty acid may be critical to maintaining skin health. In experiments with mice, a gene responsible for an enzyme that helps the body to make arachidonic acid was knocked out. Without the acid, the mice developed severe dermatitis. The animals were very itchy, they scratched themselves continuously, and they developed a lot of bleeding sores, says Manabu Nakamura, a U of I professor of food science and human nutrition. When the acid was added to the animal's diet, the itching went away. By knocking out genes, scientists can create deficiencies in certain fats and learn about their functions. Knocking out a gene that enables the body to make this enzyme led to some surprising discoveries. In this instance, they learned that arachidonic acid is essential for healthy skin function. This new understanding may have implications for treating the flaky, itchy skin that sometimes develops without an attributable cause in infants. And that's Something of Interest from the University of Illinois.
Something of Interest is a public service of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is The Farming World. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest today is Paul Schickler, the president of Pioneer. He joins us from Santiago. When we last spoke, Mr. Schickler, we had taken up at one point Optimum Acre Max. It's been approved for use in the United States by US EPA, but it was a temporary approval that expires this fall. I believe that has to do with Herculex that's in the Optimum Acre Max gene pool mix. Will this product be available next spring for farmers to plant in the United States?
Yes, this year, 2010, we did receive approval the 1st of May. So Optimum Acre Max 1 is out in very extensive demonstrations with both customers as well as within our sales rep organization. But then, as you say, the Herculex technologies as well as other insect protectant traits are up for re-registration October 2010. So this isn't something that's unique to Optimum Acre Max or unique to Herculex. Many of the insect protection traits in the industry have that renewal coming up in 2010. So once we get to that date with submitting the required data and information, we would expect to have Optimum Acre Max 1 in the market for commercial sales to growers in 2011.
And then about the refuse in the bag at 10%, producers will ask this question, I'm certain, that they won't be able to go back in and do a rescue treatment of any sort because the rescue treatment would need to be applied actually as a soil insecticide at planting. Have you looked at this, and do you think producers will be acceptable of that 10% risk in their field?
I think so, because what we've seen is when you look at the entire field with Optimum Acre Max 1, even though you have 10% of the plants that are refuge and not protected by the ripworm biotech trait, even so, the yield of that field through our studies is equal to the production of a field that would have had 100% BT corn ripworm protection. So that's an important piece of data that we've developed over the years that we've been studying this. And then secondly, all of the seed will be protected by soil, by insect seed treatment. So even though the refuge seed would not have a biotechnology component to it, it would still have a seed treatment component to it, providing that level of insurance.
And that seed treatment would be of what type?
We use both Poncho and Cruiser on our seed products.
And so is there any fear that, because those all operate on the same, I think, on the same type of chemistry, is there any fear that all the corn acres across the Corn Belt would be using the same treatment and that you would develop
fairly quickly resistance in an insect population?
I don't think so. There are a number of different products in the marketplace. So, you know, one thing that will occur is that there will be varying chemistries used by companies throughout the industry. But then also, just as part of our own integrated pest management practices, we do watch very much whether it's a biotech trait or chemistries, whether any risk or actual resistance is occurring, whether it be with insects or weed resistance as technology continues to advance. So that is something that we watch very carefully.
Any final word before I let you go for the day, Mr. Schickler?
I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. Hopefully this information is helpful. Pioneer, as I mentioned, is very excited about what we can do to improve farmer productivity. Agriculture has a great opportunity here in the years ahead to help provide the world with increased productivity to meet the demands, but equally as important, food security, so that countries throughout the world can have security in their food, improve their economies, and therefore improve the well-being of their citizens, which ultimately leads to greater global security and less civil strife. We're anxious to play a part in that, and I think through the improved genetics that we can deliver, together with improved agronomic practices and biotechnology tools, we can accomplish that productivity improvement. So we look forward to the future.
That's Paul Schickler. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrid. It's a DuPont company. He joined us from his Santiago office in Chile. We recorded the interview on the 21st day of June. By the way, if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for us here at The Farming World, we're open to any of those. Please do give us a call or write us an email note. Dave Dickey books our show. You can send both of us an email at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff, W-I-L-L, agstaff@illinois.edu. Or you can call us. The phone number is 217-333-1070. That's 217-333-1070. We're open to all of your ideas here on The Farming World. And thank you so very much for listening. I'm Yule by Extensions. Todd Gleason.